Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and it's time for Desert Oracle Radio Replay. I am fresh from my big loop trip, celebrating graduations and a new grandson. Oh, there is nothing like holding a newborn. And while I was gone, two brand new Desert Oracle Radio episodes were released. I like to keep you up to date, so here is The Mad Bomber of 29 Palms, released by Ken Lane on May 18th, 2025. And if you think about it, this one ponders how we take care of each other, or not.
Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. This past Saturday, yesterday, in my timeline, May 17, I had to drive down the hill for a medical appointment. Very exciting. Because it was either come on a Saturday or how about the end of June. And this was something I wanted to get done and over with. Down the hill is what mountain people often say when they are headed to the flatlands of civilization, or something like it. Land of the Costco, the steakhouse, the car dealership service center, the Trader Joe's, and the many medical services, from dentist to the nuclear imaging center to the Botox clinic that runs out of the eye doctor's office. We say it in the high desert, down the hill, I mean, because we are at an elevated altitude of about 4,000 feet where I'm at, but I've heard the phrase down the hill to mean the same thing over in Pinyon Hills and Phelan and Hesperia, referring to going down Cajon Pass to Rancho Cucamonga, the Inland Empire, and etc. And I've heard it in the Sierra Mountain towns on the west side, referring to the Central Valley cities where you go down to the Costco and the Smart and Final. Once I heard a girl in Flagstaff say it about Phoenix, although she was from El Dorado Springs, where they say it about Denver. Everything looked good enough, fine and good, going through Morongo Valley, but as soon as I hit the grade, something was just off. The vibe was wrong, you know? People who were driving relatively normally a few minutes earlier were suddenly behaving in strange, erratic ways. And then there was a mad dash ahead of me as everyone started changing lanes and weaving in and out of traffic, and there are only two lanes to start with on the southbound side, save as the north. Once I cleared a few winding curves, I saw the problem, or one of them. On the northbound side, there had been a car crash. And one lane, the right lane over there, was still blocked. CHP was there, along with a sheriff's car or two, and that inside lane was closed, so it was the usual chaos whenever that happens. And then ahead of me, about 30 cars ahead, I think, I saw another CHP car or a truck or some ungodly combination of the two, and it was flashing its traffic control lights and doing that thing where they sort of stay in the middle of the two lanes to keep you from doing anything else? The authorities, the powers that be, had decided that people were just driving too fast, coming up and coming down, with at least one accident to show for it. And as soon as that CHP vehicle, who was in front of my wagon train of cars, got to the bottom, it immediately went over the median and headed back up to do it again. And as soon as the law enforcement was out of sight, of course, a Dodge Charger and an enormous pickup truck, which I cannot see over or around, started playing chicken when the 62 flattens past the Desert Hot Springs turnoff. This is where I usually turn on my map, going down the hill to see which roads into Palm Springs have closed since I left the house 20 minutes earlier. The wind was strong, all the cars were rocking, and the tourists were hitting their brakes like that would stop the wind gusts. And somebody in a Nissan manages to run themselves off the road from the left lane about four cars ahead of me. So everybody ahead of me has to brake hard, and thankfully nobody else crashes. My map finally updates and it says it's getting me around various road closures, as is often the case. But Indian Canyon, from the 10, it's still open. Despite the Sahara blast of white sand through the eternal construction site there. And then I'm sent in the wrong direction, so I pull over to see what's closed and where, and it's Indian Canyon right there through Palm Springs, where I'm headed for the appointment. Once I get around the various roadblocks and to my destination, I sit in the waiting room and look at the phone to see what's going on. My first thought was it's a street fair. It's a weekend in the merry month of May. But instead, a maniac had blown himself up, along with his car, outside a fertility clinic I've driven or walked past many times over the years. It's one of those places that does all the complicated and difficult stuff required to have a baby when the regular system of wine and old jazz records didn't do the trick. The main road north out of downtown Palm Springs was closed for many blocks. There was nothing yet on the local news sites, but Twitter already had a bunch of details. And as my wait turned into 90 minutes, the governor of California and the U.S. attorney in California and the FBI and the Riverside County Sheriff's Department had all put out brief statements on Twitter about what was going on down there. We live in strange times. They are difficult times for many people, not so much in terms of basic survival. Obesity epidemics are uncommon when basic survival is the issue, but in terms of general human unhappiness, lack of purpose, lack of belief in anything that has in the past made life not only bearable, but better, beautiful even, something to cherish, despite the little ups and downs, despite the fact that nobody's perfect and no one has a perfect life, that even a beautiful life will see illness, adversity, sorrow, and ultimately the death of the body. Everybody before us knew that. They knew all of it. And yet, widespread and mainstream personal despair was little known before what the pioneering sociologist Max Weber, or Max Weber in English, called the Age of Disenchantment, when the everyday world of everyday humans on Earth just shattered. A time that reached different people at different points, but generally followed industrialization and the shrinking of the world through widespread global trade and communication, the time of the steamship, the telegraph, the railroad, radio and other mass media, the rise of the cities and the emptying of the farmlands, as agriculture no longer required the work of most humans on Earth. Consider the stock character of old stories, the village idiot, who tended to live in a tight-knit community where everybody knew everybody, including the village idiot, and everybody made basic accommodation for his condition. If he could work, he did a job that fit his abilities and eccentricities. Who cares if the churchyard gravedigger sings strange tunes or has nonsensical conversations with himself during the working day? Or maybe he helped out around the farm best he could, maybe feeding the livestock or baling hay, etc. But sometimes the angels watched over such people, but if the angels were otherwise occupied, the locals would generally keep an eye out. "Time to go home, Billy," they might say, as he wandered around the village green at midnight, howling at the moon. "Your mama's waiting up, Billy. Let's head on home." Now, the late, great Warren Zevon, maybe the finest writer of American popular song between the 1970s and the early 2000s, he told us what happens when such simple-minded people are exposed to the dark magic of modern telecommunications. In his song, Muhammad's Radio, in walked the village idiot, and his face was all aglow. He'd been up all night listening to Muhammad's Radio. Don't it make you want to rock and roll all night long? You ever see those 1970s documentary films with the madrasas in Afghanistan or rural Iran? All those boys rhythmically reciting verses from the Quran in their narrow mud brick classroom, their heads all rolling in unison? What happens when somebody can cause that from a distance? By chanting over the shortwave, riling up the yokels. Radio is hypnotic, or it can be. The mix of music and what sounds like somebody speaking only to you. Directly to you, right into your ears. Who knows what you might be convinced to do, what you might be convinced to believe.
Desert Oracle Radio.
Somebody could say, "And ye shall have a great thirst," and you can now think of nothing but quenching this great thirst. Your throat so dry, it feels like sandpaper. And next thing you know, even though thirst had not been on your mind, well, nothing but a big glass of cold water is going to stop this awful sensation, this burning thirst. And in this way, the village idiot from the Warren Zevon song has been riled up to commit terrorism. After my appointment, I took myself out for a steak dinner. That's usually my reward after going down the hill to deal with whatever modern hassle. At least I'll get a good restaurant meal before going back up the hill. So I'm at one of my regular haunts at my favorite table, taking a quick look at the news while enjoying a martini. And now it is revealed that the person who blew himself up outside the fertility clinic is from 29 Palms. He was only about an hour ahead of me going down the hill. Had I left a little bit earlier, I might have been driving by when it happened. Who knows? Lots of people might have been driving by. Had they not stopped for a coffee or to fill up the gas tank or got delayed for 5 minutes at home. There was relatively good news, too. While 4 or 5, depending on the report, 4 or 5 people had been injured, there were no other fatalities beyond the driver, the bomber. And a day later, it would be reported that all 4 had gone home. And the management of the fertility clinic announced that none of the embryos in cold storage there had been affected, and that the clinic would be open again for business on Monday, and they would continue to serve their many patients who are trying to have babies. When I had first heard the target was a reproductive health clinic, and that vague legalese management language they use on the news now, I at first assumed it was a place that deals in birth control in its various forms. Because such places, abortion clinics especially, have been targeted by individual nutcases with homemade bombs for my whole adult life and probably yours. I had not yet realized the extent of a newer death cult that has swollen up like a poison mushroom in the darkness of the internet in very recent months and years. They call themselves, among other things, antinatalist. They aren't happy with their own lives, and they are exceedingly angry that they were not asked if they wanted to exist. And on the extreme end, they aim to kill themselves while killing others. From other adults to human embryos in that strange state of frozen in-between life. To anybody who is employed by such places or just happens to be walking by or stopping at the vintage shop across the street or whatever. Trying to keep up with every new mental illness that results in an internet-connected community of violent lunatics is very much not in my job description. I moved to the desert to commune with the roadrunners and the rattlesnakes, not to find the sickest people in the saddest places online. Yet sometimes, those very people will show up IRL in real life right in your part of the world. Ready to blow you up for simply being in the wrong place, which was a normal place a moment earlier. And so then we are compelled to lift up that old half-rotted piece of plywood out back and see how many creepy crawlers are beneath it. The Reddit group called Antinatalism has 232,000 members. There were hundreds of them currently online when I took a look. Who knows how many were just looky-loos, too, coming to find out what the new sickness is, like I did. Of course, there is a statement up top from the moderator distancing themselves from the bombing of the Palm Springs Fertility Clinic. It says, "It has come to my attention that the individual responsible for today's bombing in Palm Springs name-dropped our communities in their suicide note. The philosophy we represent is explicitly one of nonviolence. We believe it is up to each individual to make their own reproductive decisions, etc. And the post is locked. No comments, of course, so nobody in the group can contradict the CYA statement. The statement was followed by a long list of topics or beliefs that are verboten, at least as of the day after the bombing. One of these is pro-mortalist, which I've come to learn means pro-death. Your own, somebody else's, whatever. I'm sure there are 300 sub-beliefs, all increasingly insane, and they all wind up being sound arguments for peacefully shutting down the internet. Here's the list. No fascist. Always got to get that in there on Reddit. No eugenics. No speciesism. No pro-mortalism. No pro-suicide content. No baby hate. No parent hate. No vegan hate. No carnist hate. No memes on weekdays. Carnist sounds like some obscure Catholic doctrine, but I'm not Catholic, so who knows. The hot post on this forum during my brief visit included: stop having kids, please. Why are antinatalists seen as toxic? And people call us crazy, but we are winning. This village idiot, previously a resident of 29 Palms before he blew himself up in Palm Springs, apparently also considered himself a, I don't know how to say this because it's one of those internet terms that cannot be spoken because it's a word typed backwards. The word is life. How would you even pronounce this? E-filism? Now I feel like unaliving myself, even knowing this exists. So these are the antinatalists who also want to end the lives of people who are currently alive. I think that's right. It hardly matters, as the antinatalism subreddit with 232,000 members is filled with stuff such as, I don't condone the attack, but sort of comments, you know the type, just hundreds of them everywhere I look. They're also proudly quoting their philosophical ringleader, this guy called David Benatar, who was just profiled by the New Yorker, I believe, and is no relation to Pat, as far as I know. Where's Philip K. Dick when you need him? This is a PKD plot, but I can't remember from which story, which novel. He wrote so many. And so many of them were hazy yet accurate descriptions of this very moment in time, the early 21st century. So that e-filism. You know, I just e-filed my state taxes a month ago. Hope you got your rebates back if you did. Whatever it is, the Reddit overlords unalived it. It's no longer there. But the bomber, according to the people in the antinatalism subreddit, was, quote, an active member until a month ago, end quote. For some insight into these strange online worlds spilling over to the physical realm, I suggest you look up the internet culture writer Catherine Dee, D-E-E, like John Dee, on Substack and or Twitter. She knows all about this stuff, has been reporting on these online back alleys for a long time. And Guy Edward Bartkus, who was 25, will not be posting anywhere any longer. He left a half-hour-long audio recording on his website with his manifesto, and I'll spare you all from learning about it. Go look it up if you want. Well, he was in a 2010 Ford Fusion, and his driver's license picture looks like, well, he sort of looks like that Luigi guy, to be honest. If you want to know the truth, like sort of a normal young man, you know, dour, but if you're listening in the high desert, by the way, and you know anything about this guy, call the Riverside Sheriff or call the feds if you want. The number is 1-800-CALL-FBI. Or you can call Z107.7 FM, talk to the news department. Guy Edward Barkus apparently had close contacts with some other people of this sort, including a girl up in Washington State who was unalived, apparently at her request by the person she lived with up in Washington State. Let's return to Max Weber, or Max Weber, as we say in Germany. His thesis of modern disenchantment says that in a post-religious industrial age, religious beliefs will find a secular outlet, such as our antinatalists forming a sort of theology around their death cult, from the supposed rational belief that people should utterly stop reproducing and die out, the sooner the better. It's not enough for them that the world's population is already peaking, already in decline in China, Western Europe, Russia, Japan, South Korea, even parts of Latin America and the Middle East already. The demographic cliff that I have talked about many times on this program over the past 9 years, we're already over that, Reddit or not. So their movement actually will succeed in a sense, but only in the dying out of their own belief system, which is always the case with doomsday suicide cults. The cult ends when the members are gone, whether violently or the old-fashioned way, alone in an apartment somewhere, a feast for the house cats. The people who lived around the bomber's former residence were evacuated on Saturday afternoon so that the bomb squad could go through the place and defuse any special gifts and surprises left by our local lunatic. This was out around Adobe and 2 Mile, you know if you know. Some talk around Freedom Plaza yesterday, some interesting talk among the neighbors. We will likely never know all the details, and ultimately it won't change what happened. And we are only 5 months into the year, a year that started off with a terror attack on the French Quarter, my old hometown, and was quickly followed by a car bomb in Las Vegas. And that's leaving out the weekly car attacks in various European nations. It seems like this is hitting kind of a troubling level of popularity. Disenchantment did not end with Max Weber, who became unalive a century ago. It was just getting started. But this broadcast, with soundscapes by Red, Blue, Black, Silver, and go see his Bandcamp page and maybe buy a couple of his digital releases. I hear he's saving up for something. But this show has always been about enchantment. That's why it comes on the radio late at night, 10 p.m. Fridays in the high desert on KCDZ 107.7 FM. The wild desert, history, mythology, prophets, and poets. That's what we do. Thank you for listening, and good night from the voice of the desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay, broadcasting on KGBM Bozeman Community Radio at 95.9 FM and streaming online at kgbm.org. Next up is the most recent Desert Oracle Radio episode, and this one has me thinking about the way wild things around us live their lives or not. It might have you thinking about the wild critters closest to you. From May 29th, 2025, here is Who Got Eaten by the Old Gopher Snake.
Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert, this land of nocturnal wonder. I don't mean the potholed parking lots of Yucca Valley and its 90% vacant commercial and retail strip. And not the traffic jam getting out of the national park once the sun goes down. Not too much wonder within such scenes, although just looking up from your phone can give you a glimpse into another world. I walked outside with my coffee and a book the other day, and the enormous gopher snake that lives under the house was in repose in the shade. A foot-long bulge in its belly about halfway down, wherever they keep the belly on a snake. This old snake knows me pretty well and did not budge, so I sat down on the porch and opened the book, but it was hard to get back into it. With the new mystery so strongly upon my mind right in front of me, who did the gopher snake eat? The reality of knowing the wild animals on your land is knowing that they generally live on an accelerated timeline. The new crop of Mojave cottontails and rock squirrels each spring will shrink to one or two lucky buddies by late summer, with the rest of them succumbing to reckless road crossings and red-tail hawks and rattlesnakes, the local ravens, feasting on the remains, if there are any. Was that a rock squirrel slowly digesting within this 6-foot-long yellow and chocolate-colored gopher snake? A pack rat? A wood rat? A mourning dove? A gopher snake, which can be any of the 9 subspecies endemic to North America, is a great friend to the homesteader, keeping not only the rodents in check, including the various mice who carry the hantavirus, but also claiming territory from rattlers in your vicinity. Which have their role in the world, of course, but it's foolish to let rattlers get comfortable around your habitation. Let them work the back acreage, the back country, or that one weird neighbor's property several acres over. More than once, I found a young gopher snake dazed in the road and brought it home to thrive on the endless supply of the desert's small rodents around any kind of household. I do love to see the kangaroo rats bopping around, the little deer mice, and especially the antelope ground squirrel. But everybody's got to eat now and then. One of my favorite little mouse friends is a vicious predator. The grasshopper mouse tears apart centipedes and scorpions and even feasts upon the scorpion stinger, the stinger full of venom, which, as I've told many wide-eyed people sitting around desert campfires over the years, gives the grasshopper mouse a strange narcotic high. The hoot-hoot of the great horned owl fills me with ancient thoughts of mystery, of wisdom, of the divine. But it haunts the rodents. It haunts any small creature running around after the sun goes down. It hypnotizes them when close by. They try to reason. They try to triangulate the hooting with the environment around them. Is it coming from behind? Is the sound just bouncing around the boulders? Oh, God, where is it coming from? And then it's too late. It's over. Another weird owl pellet of fur and bone for an amazed child to find days or weeks or months later. Why, look at that, little Johnny. The whole tail is still in there, and those are its little feet. Time calls for all of us eventually. And sometimes it sounds like an owl. The film director and overall artist, David Lynch, passed away only a few months back now. I saw an announcement about some Hollywood auction house selling off his household goods, his possessions, his personal stuff. And because his house contained a music studio and a woodworking shop and film editing decks and all manner of audiovisual gear, from the unique to the cheap, all held within a couple of neighboring houses he accumulated on Mulholland Drive over the decades. Many of these items may find new life with other musicians, designers, photographers, movie makers. Maybe somebody on TikTok will start shooting everything with Lynch's old 16mm film camera. Who knows? But it saddened me seeing a life reduced to its pieces with starting bids of $50 or $100. Movie scripts and book collections, record players, and a dozen different espresso makers. It especially got me down to see the things David Lynch had kept from his father. His dad's old flannel shirts and rucksack from hiking in the Northwest. Even his dad's military keepsakes. Even the tri-corner American flag that the family takes home after a U.S. military veteran is buried. Might not a descendant of David Lynch, who was also a descendant of Donald Lynch, forest ranger and forestry scientist, want to keep such small things that speak of the lives of one's forefathers, one's forebears? I believe someone such as David Lynch, who made such a lasting impact on the world's culture over his 8 decades of life, and will likely maintain that position for at least another generation or two, should be remembered properly in a proper museum. Or any museum, a Hollywood museum for tourists and film buffs, or a spot in the Smithsonian in Washington, or a permanent exhibit at LACMA, LA's Museum of Modern Art. Maybe such things are in progress, I don't know. But before I sold everything off, I'd find a room with good windows, with good exposure to the golden Los Angeles sunlight, and put together a version of his workshop with the furniture that he made by hand, his coffee cups and ashtrays, his shelves full of his movie and art books, his many religious and spiritual texts, from the Oxford Bible to the complete prophecies of Nostradamus. A selection of his guitars and noise pedals and keyboards and speakers. Buzzsaws and table saws show people the world of a working artist working all his life on this or that project. Whether a culture-defining television series or a weird bunch of food cans he decorated for a forgotten music video. Paintings and lithographs and photographs and film posters framed on the walls, reel-to-reel decks and microphones, his director's chair, maybe his children divvied up the good stuff. Maybe the auction was just leftover stuff. Makes me wonder what my own children might want from the junk that I've accumulated. And I hardly have anything these days. I could move out in an afternoon. Just me and a hand truck and a U-Haul. And I've done it before and I'll do it again. And lately I've been thinning out what little is even here too. Preparing for the last move, I tell myself. Although I don't believe anything is the last until a person is not around to know better. I've lived in this house for a half dozen years and never even hung up a painting. Closets full of art, some of it even good art. Gotta get that stuff sold, clear it out. Some of it's even worth a little bit, although never as much as you hope, never as much as you need. But it's mostly books around here, books overflowing from every shelf, every room. They've long since taken over the kitchen counters, any flat surface. And I'll get rid of many of them, most of them maybe, over these next several months. Get rid of anything I never finished, anything I finished and did not like. It'll still be half the truck, the endless moving boxes of books, but at least it'll be down to a couple hundred or so that matter. That I like to have around, whether to read again, to open up for divination, or just to look at, to remind me what I learned from this one or that one, where it led me, what it warned of. Boxes of newspaper clippings. Photo albums, too, probably a dozen or two. The best ones filled with mysterious snapshots or darkroom prints from around the world. Covering a century and a half, when you include the handful of pictures I still have from my grandparents, great-grandparents, my parents, thousands of years of ancestors condensed down to a single 1970s photo album with yellowed blue strips on the pages. And brittle leaves of yellowing plastic as protective cover. Somewhere there's a ragged box of old laptops and hard drives that will likely never be accessed again. Each generation of laptop ever more filled with photographs, abandoned manuscripts, love letters, PDF files of old mortgages, court papers, property surveys, closing statements, hundreds of memory cards, various formats, and ever-increasing capacities. Once I grabbed a random memory card and stuck it in my camera and wiped it out before realizing it was a 20 megabyte card from 20 years ago. That had the only recordings of a record's worth of songs I'd composed and put down in a home studio somewhere. Was that in Reno? Who knows, and ultimately who cares? I don't really care now. So who would possibly care after I'm gone? For a lot of people these days, their world is mostly defined by and recalled by the various media products they passively consumed while growing up. I see people online mourning the disappearance of their favorite childhood TV shows, cartoons, because a corporation somewhere decided to delete it all, remove it from any public access for a tax write-off or whatever. And then people want the DVD and it's $200 on eBay.
Desert Oracle Radio.
Entire lives, whole lives, billions of lives on Earth, mostly documented and recorded on cell phones, which will be reformatted and wiped clean if the phone even makes it that far. I was wasting time. And at this point, it's really wasting time. Looking at a social network on the computer when I had work to do, and I came across something that plunged me into such sadness, and I still haven't shaken it. Many nights later, a week later. And I don't even want to get into it, but the thought that stuck with me was that this person's young life was over, and the phone they used to communicate with the world, to try to get somebody's attention, that phone was at the bottom of a cold, dark river somewhere. With the person. I don't know how we got to such a point where so many people have nobody at all. Which is why I was saying last week on this broadcast that this broadcast has always been about enchantment. That's why it comes on the radio late at night, 10 p.m. Fridays in the high desert on KCDZ 107.7 FM and Valley 104.9. At a Carnation in Kings County, Washington State, 8 p.m. Sundays. But it's on the radio at night, and maybe in your ears at night, if that's when you listen to the podcast, so that the daytime world and its blandness and bureaucracy can be forgotten for a while, put aside. It's why I tell stories about the wild desert wilderness and nature, the birds and the bees. That's why I dig up old tales from history, mythology, the prophets, the poets. Why I believe, as other romantics of my time and times past, that in wild nature we can glimpse the world of the wild animals, of the boulders and the tree and the cactus, their existence lived in a kind of continuous euphoria. The old magic of life, the life we are born into to experience in that way and have to work real hard to avoid. But we can break free of the grim gray palette of the modern world, the gloomy gray boring movies and TV shows, the gray fake wooden floors, the flat gray corporate workspace, the gray nowhere, love being zonked out on pharmaceuticals. When we break free, then we can break free of the world of death. Reject the death world. Demand the world of the living while you're alive. The world of color, of beauty, of wildness, and other such joy. It can be as fleeting and accessible as a walk to a little park where the birds are flitting about and the flowers are blooming, or as dramatic as quitting your dull job and moving to the wilderness to live a life that makes you feel alive. Why not? In the meantime, go see a Shakespeare play. They're usually in the parks this time of the year. They're usually free. Go alone if you want. It's fine. You might even meet somebody. Go walk on the waterfront. You might even witness something crazy, like a Mexican naval sailing ship crashing into the Brooklyn Bridge. Or most likely, you'll just have a nice time. Go see a quartet playing Bartok. Go dance to the DJs. You can maybe go see the famous neo-disco DJ duo called the Flying Mojito Brothers. They're touring around. Listen to their new album, already piling up the rave reviews. It's called Just Passing Through on Ubiquity Records. That's the one I'm on, the title track. And this isn't it, because I can't play it, because we'll get shut down. This track you're hearing is by Red Blue Black Silver. Go find him on Bandcamp. I've been on some different artist records over the past half dozen years, which is always fun. But this Flying Mojito Brothers record, that's the first sort of disco record I've done. I like it. I hope you like it too. I should mention the website that Desert Oracle is represented by, desertoracle.com, where you can order what's left of the back issues. Desert Oracle, yellow vinyl, Arizona sun-tested bumper stickers. And from there, you can click over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/Desert Oracle, where a couple of hundred listeners support the show, the few and the proud, amongst the tens of thousands who listen to each episode. And I also appreciate the anti-Patreon people who will send a check or even a $100 bill, which I'm still carrying around because nobody will break it, to our P.O. Box in Joshua Tree. That's Desert Oracle, Box 1735, Joshua Tree, California, 92252. But I also know times are tough for lots of us. There are always kind of tough times for the oddballs anyway, the night people. Just leaving a nice review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or on our newish YouTube channel, where all 244 episodes so far are available with absolutely no video to distract you and at no cost. Well, that's a contribution too. And one that can really do something too. You can shape the soft minds of the public, whoever they are. Finally, I need to make a correction. A couple of weeks ago on the Father Crowley Show, the Tales of the Desert Padre of the Owens Valley, the Eastern Sierra, I was riffing at the end of the program, and I had a couple of different roadside marker locations in front of me, and I mixed up the location of the Father Crowley Memorial Cross with the location of a Clampers Monument just across the highway at the Walker Pass turnoff. So if you want to see what remains of the Father Crowley Cross on your next drive up or down California State 14, well, it's just before the 178 junction. And the actual cross, I've seen it many times myself, but it has been removed by the state scolds, I suppose, in the last couple of years. And they say it's now in Ridgecrest, which I have not verified. But on the northbound side of the 14, that's at the corner of the State Route 14 and a dirt road, Sure Right Road, that's S-H-U-R-I-T-E, and I'll stop next time I'm passing through next week, and I'll take a picture of what's left. There had been a plain wooden cross that some good soul had put up after the big metal cross was taken down after so many decades of harming absolutely no one. Thanks for listening, and good night from the voice of the desert.
Sounds like they're working on a road near us a little bit, probably putting some gravel down. Well, my thanks to Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks to every volunteer, underwriter, and supporter of KGBM, and thank you for listening. You can leave me a voicemail or text at 406-404-6246. You can hear this program broadcast on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgbm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgbm.org website. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Till then, keep doing good things, stay well, and sweet dreams. See you next week.